in the pale sky. "Can we come with you, Lady Grandmother?" Her boys appear from nowhere, mud on their faces as usual. "Where are you going with that basket?" "You can't come with me," I say. "I'm looking for plover eggs, but I will take you tomorrow if I find a nest."
"Can't we come now?"
asks Thomas, Elizabeth's oldest boy. I put my hand on his head. His warm, silky curls remind me of Anthony when he was a loving little boy like this one. "No, you must find your mother and eat your supper, and go to bed when she orders you. But I will take you with me tomorrow." I leave them and go across the gravel garden at the front of the house, through the wicket gate, and down to the river. There is a little bridge across the river, a couple of small wooden planks where the children like to come to fish, and I go across, ducking my head under the upturned branches of the ash tree, and scramble down the little bank to the trunk of the tree. I put my arms around the tree to tie the three strings around it, and my cheek lies against the rippled grey bark. For a moment I listen. Almost I can hear the heart of the tree beating. "What will become of Elizabeth?" I whisper. And it's almost as if the leaves can whisper back to me. "What will become of my Elizabeth?" I have never been able to foresee her future, even though of all my children she has always been the one who promised so much. I've always thought she might be especially blessed. I wait. The leaves rustle. "Well, I don't know," I say to myself. "Perhaps the stream will tell us." Each charm is now tied to the tree by its own long dark string, and when I throw them out into the water, as far as they can go, I hear three splashes like a salmon snapping a fly, and they are gone, and the threads are invisible. I stand for a moment and look into the moving water. "Elizabeth," I say quietly to the stream. "Tell me what will become of Elizabeth, my daughter." At dinner that night, my husband says that the king is recruiting soldiers for a new battle. He will be marching north. "You won't have to go," I ask in sudden alarm, "nor Anthony."
"We'll have to send men, but to be honest, my dear, I don't think they would especially want us in the line."
Anthony gives a rueful chuckle.
"Like Lovelace," he says, and his father laughs. "Like Trollope."
"I should ask King Edward to inquire into my dower," Elizabeth remarks. "For sure, my boys will have nothing, unless I can find someone who will make Lady Grey keep her promise to me."
"Kidnap him as he rides by," Anthony suggests. "Fall on your knees to him." "My daughter will do no such thing," my husband rules. "And we can provide for you here, until you reach agreement with Lady Grey."
Elizabeth sensibly holds her tongue. But the next day, I see her wash her boys' hair and dress them in their Sunday suits, and I say nothing. I splash a little perfume of my own brewing on the veil of her headdress, but I give her neither apple blossom nor apple. I believe there is not a man in the world who could ride past my daughter and not stop and ask her name. She puts on her plain grey gown and sets off from the house, holding her boys firmly by their hands, walking down the track to the road from London, where the king is certain to ride by with his troop. I watch her go, a pretty young woman on a warm spring day. And it's like a dream to see her, stepping lightly down the lane between the hedges, where the white roses are coming into flower. She is walking out to her future, to claim her own, though I still don't know what her future will be. I go to the stillroom and take down a small jar, sealed tight with a waxed cork. It is a love philter I made for Anthony's wedding night.
I take it to the brew house and put 3 drops in a jug of our best ale, and take it to the great hall with our best glasses. And then I wait, quietly, with the spring sunshine coming through the mullioned windows and a blackbird singing in the tree outside. I don't have to wait very long. I look down the road, and there is Elizabeth, smiling and laughing, and walking beside her is the handsome boy whom I first saw outside the Queen's rooms when he bowed over my hand so politely. Now he is a grown man, and the King of England. He is leading his great war horse, and high up on its back, clinging to the saddle, their faces bright with joy, are my 2 grandsons. I leave the window and open the great hall door to see them myself. I see Elizabeth's flush and the young king's bright smile, and I think to myself, this is fortune's wheel indeed. Can it be? Can such a thing be?
The Lady of the Rivers was written by Philippa Gregory and read by Bianca Amato. Recording, editing, and post-production by Erica Weintraub. The associate producer was Christina Zarafanidis. The Lady of the Rivers was produced and directed by Carol Shapiro. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. The Lady of the Rivers is available in hardcover from Touchstone. Also from Simon & Schuster Audio, written by Philippa Gregory, The White Queen, read by Bianca Amato, and The Red Queen, read by Bianca Amato, with narration by Graham Malcolm.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.